Whispers in the Wind. Hi, and welcome to Whispers in the Wind, a podcast where your story has a voice. Here in this podcast, we celebrate and share all kinds of true stories from you, the people, and give you the opportunity to share your wisdom and experiences so you have a chance to help those people who may be in a similar situation to what you were once in. Today's story is for those people who are confused and face a sense of affliction when it comes to celebrating who you uniquely are due to the trouble society can cause in accepting oneself. In today's episode, we follow the story of my good friend Cam, a gay Muslim. His story talks about the journey he took to accepting himself for the way he is and how he still practices Islam. This is his story. So, where does your story start?
I think it started when I was in primary school in year six, and I genuinely started to feel some sort of attraction towards the opposite gender. Then after year six had finished, and you know, we all get to say goodbye to our friends, you know, unless you're going to secondary school with them. But unfortunately, I went to a secondary school that I didn't have my friends. And I was Muslim, I identified as Muslim, but I went into year seven thinking that, you know, I'm going to marry the man of my dreams, only to then find out, and this was, I remember this literally yesterday, I was in art class, and I had a teacher called Mr. Teague. You know, I was a fan of his work and everything. And I remember talking about marriage between a man, and all my friends looked at me very puzzled. And the look that they gave me was just, it was met with bewilderment. I was quite bewildered by their expression. I was like, what's going on? Only to find out that it was considered haram. And for those people who don't know what haram is, haram is a word in Arabic that is used to say it's forbidden and it's against God.
It's a sin.
It's a sin, essentially. Yeah.
Just to back up here, because you actually announced the fact you're starting year six, and I think it's that actually brought me to my question. What was your childhood like before you actually discovered this?
So my childhood was very up and run down. Like, we were moving from house to house almost. Like, you know, before we actually, I was in another primary school before, but and because of living situations and like our house only being temporary, we genuinely was just moving one place to another until we finally settled down. And like, what I thought was considered to be home was only just temporary, and I didn't realize how many years had gone by. But we stayed there for like a couple of years, and I thought that was considered home, but we kept moving as well.
But was that because you didn't like the areas or parents' jobs or anything like that?
I think it came down to the fact that both my parents were, my mother especially at the time, having had four cesarean births, she decided like, you know, like that would be the time. I'm going to be honest, it was hard. At the time, I was very much disorientated. I was the firstborn of my family, so I was just reacting to things as I was growing up, whereas my siblings were looking at me for an example, whereas I didn't really have a role model to look up to. So really and truly, I was just reacting to stimuluses in my environment and just reacting as I started to get older, then formulating ideas as I start to get older.
Well, what about your father? Because normally fathers are seen as role models with their sons as well.
Yes, you know, I came out to my mum. I said, "Mum, I think I'm gay." And, you know, this was a big shock to her, because she thought, wow, whoa, this information just hit her like, whoa, where's this coming from? Like, you can't be this. And why? And how? All those questions you could imagine. Like, I felt like I was like, it almost felt like I had committed a crime. Like, I was being persecuted almost. And when I had asked that question, she was not accepting at first. But now, and you know, my dad, where you said my father, I feel like I've been dropping him subliminal hints over the years as I've been growing. And heck, my cousins know. If my cousins know, and like, if he's not picking up what I'm, you know, dropping down, then, you know, and he's never asked me as well. And, you know, if he actually sat down and said, "Hey, son, what's your sexual orientation?" I would happily say, That's my business. I would first by start by saying that's my business, and secondly saying in no way, in shape or disrespect to any of you, it's not the way you brought me up, because a lot of the time South Asian parents have this inherent feeling. And I actually had to sit down with my mum and I asked her what this is, and it's ijot. The word ijot in Bengali, it means honor and like reason to be, and that in South Asian cultures is a lot. It's not easy to swallow someone's pride, especially coming from a South Asian background. So I would never go to my dad and say, hey dad, by the way, I'm gay, because to me that's like I'm coming in with my lifestyle and I'm forcing him to accept it. And that's not how it should be. It should be a two-way street. And I feel like we need perfect dialogue as well, and a better setting, I would say, as well, for in order to have this sort of chat.
I take you were sort of born in a sort of strict household.
Absolutely.
Right. Before you had realized anything or anything like that, what was one of the key things you can remember as a child that actually still sticks with you till now from your childhood?
This was when I was in year 5, and I remember this vividly, like it was yesterday almost. I remember one of the year 6 students that was above me. We were at playtime, at break time. You know, just having our break, came up to me and said, are you gay? Now, I had no idea what the word gay actively meant. I did not know what that word meant. I didn't know what the word, but I remember my friend having a screw face. But for those people who don't know what screw face is, just looking at someone like with intent, like with like, are you okay look? That sort of like, are you all right look? Like, you wouldn't be doing that. And he immediately said, no, my friend is not gay. Like, he had automatically assumed that I'm a heterosexual man. And, you know, I didn't say anything about it and I didn't do anything about it, because at the time I didn't know whether or not, to be quite honest, I didn't know at the time if I was what I was considered, like if that was a sin or not. I wasn't as invested. I wasn't as far into Islam as I was when I was a child. I was still growing, yeah. You know, and that comes with time and age, I guess, I would say.
So when did you actually realize you were actually gay? Like, this meant, oh, I'm actually gay.
Oh, I believe when in year 9, you know, when I was like around in year 9, and year 8 and that sort of period, where I was like, you know, I really like the idea of being with a guy, even though at the time I was just like very much like just wanting to act straight, if that makes sense, you know, just because that was considered the norm. Anyone who was anything out of that, that they were immediately frowned upon by peers, and I and hell, I had rumors going about me for a while. And
what kind of rumors?
Like rumors like, oh, are you, like, excuse my language, but are you a faggot? Things make sexual comments as well. That won't that, you know, if you want me to be blunt, I'll be blunt. Hey, they said things like, so do you prefer up the ass and all that sort of question. Now
the
kids nowadays, genuinely, with the way society is nowadays and what we see and what we see in the media, we are subjected to that, I'm afraid, and we have to take that in as we go, and that is just what I was met in my period, because I'm a Generation Z, so I was born in 2001, so they were quite blunt, and they almost looked at the idea of homosexuality, and especially in a school where it was a majority of South Asians, a majority of where there were South Asians, so there was almost this tone, underlying tone of you're almost like considered heretic in their eyes, in that fold, because it's in Islam one of the major sins, as it's categorized as follows, is homosexuality. And at that period of time, I was very conflicted and I had no idea what this meant and what this meant for my friends. Will my friends like maybe like ditch me and say, hey, dude, like I was about to say the word weird. And that to me nowadays, I would look back and be like, I would never say that. But we have to go back to what if we're talking about my childhood, this is the truth. This is what happened. I hid it for so long, you know, pretended like to continue to be straight in my secondary school, even though it was very apparent and almost my teachers knew. It was very apparent, like, you know, like the way in which I presented myself and the way my mannerisms, and for instance, and how I would be very wary on specific things, and like just my attitude to certain things as well. It was all very flamboyant. I would say it was very flamboyant. So anyone would be like, "Oh, hey, by the way," if anyone asked me now, like, "Oh, hey, by the way, are you gay?" I'll be like, "Yeah, I am," because, and that time, it wasn't easy to say that. I'll be genuine.
No, I can imagine. Those times is very hard.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but I know there's going to be someone saying, well, it was a lot harder in my time. You're going to say that. And, you know, everyone's challenge is different.
Absolutely. Completely.
No, that's... I was actually going to ask, what were your first sort of few thoughts when you actually realised you are gay? Like, sort of talk to me about that realisation that you realised that you are. What did you think?
At that time, I didn't have internet until I was in year 9.
Wow.
Because of, as I said, current moving housing situations. Until I realized what I thought what I could potentially be, I was very much in doubt. Maybe I could have been bisexual, or maybe I could have been that. I googled gay and Islam, and then I realized that it was homosexuality, like it was forbidden. And you know, I was the type of person that would go to school every day, Monday to Friday. Saturday, Sunday, I was home tutored by my imam, by a mosque person, a mesab, we call it in our culture. So a teacher who would come in and teach us the Quran. And yeah, you know, and I was then, I was, because obviously I didn't have the internet, I was very much like unaware, less so to say, about the idea of the topic. When I presented this information to my mesab looked at me very confused. And he was like, why do you need to know this? It's like, please tell me. And, you know, I didn't tell him automatically. It took me 3 years whilst I was reading Quran to finally then come out to him and say, look, I'm this way. And it wasn't met with disgust. It wasn't met with like I wasn't met with a horrific view that I had intentionally had thought in my head. And I was like, whoa, oh, okay, what does this mean? And he said, and I remember, we learn a lot about forgiveness in Islam and such. And, you know, at that point, discovering when I was now becoming, like the idea of being gay, I was conflicted. I had so much pressure in my heart, man. I had so much pressure in my heart. I didn't know what to do, you know. Having girlfriends like for show, quick fixes for nothing, you know, that was some hard shit. Like honestly, like what like imagine just like someone that you hear on the internet and people and media and everything else, like all these religious leaders that have an opinionated view saying you need to be this way, you need to be like, you doing this goes against the folds of this, that, and the other. And I was heartbroken. I was heartbroken for so many years, like thinking like I must be a parasite. The look you are saying, that's exactly how I felt. I felt like a parasite. I felt like, why would God give me such a big thing that I could never handle? Why me? Why me is what I asked. You know, what did I do? I was in love with Islam as a child. As I was growing up, I went to mosque after school. I was invested in my salah. What did I do wrong? That's what I asked myself. What did I do wrong?
As a child, when you realized this and everything else, how did you actually start to navigate your way through the journey and discover more about yourself? Because understanding that you are gay, it's a big discovery about yourself, and you see it through to the end, which I think you have done. So how did you start that process?
You know, I didn't have many friends in school. So my other way of coping was playing video games, man. I was playing video games and I was reaching out to a bunch of variety of people. So meeting like a lot of these PlayStation users, I would say, you know, you see a lot of people that you meet on the internet. And to be quite honest, you know, you meet a lot of good people and a lot of bad people. That comes with experience, and that comes with like making good friends and making good bonds. I had someone that was gay, and I was in a group of friends, close-knit of boys. One of them happened to be gay that happened to join our group of friends later, and my friends were okay with that. And I was straight, like, acting towards my friends. And now I was, let's say, hiding in the closet. That's exactly the term. I was hiding in the closet. I didn't know, but I didn't feel happy that he was there. I didn't. For some reason, my own self-hatred of being gay reflected poorly amongst other people.
It sounds like you're jealous the fact that he could be openly himself and you couldn't.
It almost did feel like that, but it was just more so the fact that I was taught by my parents and like taught by all these religious leaders, sheikhs, and like I always like, you know, I was always the type of person to acknowledge Islam, and you know, I was always met with this like opposing view, like having that view was always met with like either hostility or met with disapproving looks and stuff. And to navigate myself, my friend Taylor, you know, at first we didn't like each other because I was probably in a way I probably was jealous of the fact that he was openly gay. And you know, to be real, you know, I was like just like seeing things for the first time and reacting to things. But at this point, I was undiagnosed, and I realized that I don't know where this is stemming from, why I'm feeling a certain way. And then, you know, I had myself checked over by health professionals, and you know, they confirmed I have a BPD. For those people who don't know what BPD is, it's a personality disorder, and it just means that you feel emotions and a lot stronger than a regular person. So sometimes intensity and different feelings. I was really hurt by when people were calling me a faggot. People calling me things like you're gonna go burn in hell. Those words hurt me because you know the saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words won't hurt me. Is that that had so much meaning to that?
Took me a long time to learn that one as well. The words are literally just come in one ear, they go out the other. They don't really do anything else to you. Anything. I think words can only hurt you if you let them in your mind and
absolutely.
Your heart.
No, I completely
once
agree.
They're there, then you're fucked.
Oh, no, I completely agree. You know, I had started explaining my religious side of my things to this friend, Taylor. I'm going to be honest, my friend Taylor, who helped guide me what it means to be gay and what it means to be okay. And, you know, he helped me come out. You know, I came out by crying. I was in tears, bro. You know, I was actually in tears, you know. And, you know, a 17-year-old boy, like, who at that time, when my friend was 18, was just, like, confronting me and, like, making sure I was okay and saying that, you know, everything is going to be okay. And, you know, don't, like, what you're feeling now, this will pass. You'll get stronger from this. And I will be honest, like, the years of bullying, that gave me thick skin. I'll be honest, it started to make me have thick skin. And then I started to realize that everyone has an opinion. And then I started following like comedians and like different artists and like from different all platforms and different all walks of life, just saying to me like how much that everyone has an opinion, like everyone has an asshole. You know, that's just like the same thing with opinions. Everyone has one.
So actually that brings me to my next question. You know, as you are a Muslim, obviously, being gay and a Muslim, it brings a lot of controversy. A lot, as you've explained.
Oh, yes.
How did you deal with that?
To be honest, I kind of just ignored it. I'll be quite apparent and blunt. You know, whilst everyone was making assumptions of me and this, that, and the other, I was in self-denial because I couldn't be this way. From a religious point of view, I went to the mosque. I asked someone, what is homosexuality? You know, I had someone tell me that it's a sin and it's a disease and like you should be careful, like just stay away from it, you know, that's and then like the misconception of that of HIV and AIDS, and like the little understanding of what some people had of the disease itself, and like where it's like produced, and like, and I think that's what started to like create this fear, because I didn't want those things. I thought, like, is being gay a death sentence? Like, does being gay mean it's like a death sentence? That's what I was confused about.
Right.
And I had no knowledge, almost zero knowledge. If it hadn't been for my friend Taylor teaching me the things I know, of course, school came in handy. I studied A-level biology for a little bit. Mm. And that obviously, and you know, I knew how the biology works. And from a biological point of, from a standpoint, I knew how things worked internally. And what it, and like spirit and feeling spiritual was different. I could recognize that between the two after years and years of just understanding that you don't have to feel bad for necessarily everything you do. You're not perfect. And then you know, and what kind of made it makes me laugh some days is like you know, like the first human beings that were created, they made a mistake, and then their punishment was to be sent on the earth. Like, obviously, that depending on what faith you are, that differs, but each to their own. But from a Muslim point of view, you know, when you sin and you, when you, I, at that point, I genuinely felt like, you know what, there was no turning back, because I could either let the bullying crush me, or I could do it myself. I was very, very low with my life. It wasn't easy. I had depression, bro. It got so bad to the point where I was actually sectioned.
Really?
Yes.
Forgive me for asking this, but did you go suicidal with the depression?
It did come across my mind. It really did. It really, really did. It because I genuinely thought there was no escape. Not just because of being gay, because I wasn't really condemning myself too much from it. Like, after I had committed sin, I immediately felt bad. You know, at around 17, I didn't mean for it to happen. It just kind of happened, like, through feelings and, you know, in the stir of the moment, the heat of the moment, as they say. Things just happened one to another. And, you know, I was still 17 at the time. But when I went home, bro, I performed ghusl. So for those people who don't know what ghusl is, it means in Islam, in Arabic, I think ghusl means cleanliness, like in a state of cleanliness. I wasn't in a state of cleanliness. So what I would do is I'd run myself a bath. I would clean myself up. I would go to the mosque, wear my best attire for the mosque, go there. And the first thing I did was cry. The first thing I did was pray. And at the end of the prayer, I remember this crystal clear. I was there and I started crying in my dua. A dua, for those people who don't know, it means prayer. Like, whilst you're clasping your hands together whilst calling for God.
Is that because you felt guilty and were you asking for forgiveness or something?
Yes. Yes. Because I felt for a long time like I was like, wow, God, I let you down big time. Like,
you know? So you actually felt ashamed of being gay at the time?
Yeah, I did. I did. Because like any form of like sexualized, like even zina. So for those people who don't know, zina, adultery, like having sex before marriage, it was like, it was very like, no, you can't be doing this. And, you know, I don't want to broadcast my sins. Like, no one wants to broadcast what their details in their personal life. But, you know, at that time, I was just like, whoa. Like, I've just done a big sin. I've just committed a big sin. And I feel really heart-achy. I can't explain this icky feeling that I had in my heart. It's almost like if I could give you an illustration for food for thought, imagine your heart. Imagine just a human heart. And imagine a cigarette burning it. You have that little black hole. And then if you don't take care of it, that's going to spread. And that's what it felt like in the back end of my mind. That I felt like I was not meant to be here. And unfortunately, it did make me go a bit unstable. You know, I suffer from OCD and EUPD. So I did say BPD. That's short for EUPD, but it's an emotional unstable personality disorder. And like, I was really finding it difficult, man. Like, it was hard. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't turn to other people. Like, my friend who was living in Scotland, his tailor living in, he wasn't here. Like, people wasn't here. He wasn't here in the country with me. He's in Scotland. But he still rang me every day when I was in hospital and just checking up on me, my family checking in on me, realizing that mental health isn't a joke. And like, they started taking my BPD a lot more seriously and my OCD a lot more seriously, because when I tried to pray to God, to pray the gay away, You know how we, as Muslims, we have to perform ablution? We have to perform ablution. So we have to do wudu. So wudu is ablution. We have to perform ablution before prayer. And I remember I used to get really ill. And because of my OCD thoughts, I used to get like thoughts of like having to repeat things again and again and again. And then my parents labeled me this word in Bengali, which I will call is the word mutashakir, which means someone who is constantly fretting about whether or not if they've done it right. And it's an insult to basically say you're wasting water.
Wow.
And I didn't know what it was. And, you know, praying and like being gay was one of many problems. But being religious, like having to pray, having to be a Muslim was even harder.
Would you say, this is just from what I'm hearing, but would you say your OCD sort of stems from this thing of coming to terms with your guilt and washing away your sins for your religion? Would you say that's where your OCD comes from? Making sure everything is perfect so you yourself, in your view, are as perfect as you can be?
I'll be honest, that's not how I viewed it. I viewed it more as a way of getting closer to God. I have performing ablution and like, what we say in Arabic and stuff is called waswasa. So having like the shaitan or Satan, if you will, whispering in your ears, making you feel like you are not performing things or doing things. You know, I started questioning faith at this point. I started questioning, do I belong? Like, is it faith or is it my mental illness? Am I hearing voices? You know, I then started to be like, right, I know I'm ill. And then once my BPD started to get in control, I started to then realize when I started getting older that being gay, like if someone asks me like now being gay is like, I say that like it's there's no pain for me to say it. There's no pain anymore as I used to feel it. Cause you know, during my teenage years, I used to blame religion a lot. I used to blame religion a lot for saying like, God, why me? Like, why are you doing this to me? And also, why would you burden me with something that I can't control? I was just asking a lot of questions, like upset with God, like saying you burdened me with something, and like I can never be happy. Like always, just blaming God for my reason. But when really and truly, as I started to get older, honestly, it's really true. You know, when you meet different people and like when you're working and stuff, and you meet different people, hey man, like it's not, you can't control that. You know, like, I didn't ask for this. I didn't choose this. I didn't decide one day I'm going to wake up and suddenly be gay. I prayed the gay away just to even like give me a bit of comfort of reaching to Allah. But then once I realized that it was people pushing me away and like rather like my community excommunicating me from my own like friends and stuff like that, people saying that, oh no, stay away from him, like he's a gay Muslim, like had Muslim friends like leave me be, like leave my life because of the fact that my lifestyle goes against the religion. And at times, and that's what I used to blame religion for, and I was like very, very rebellious. I was very much like, I can't believe some, like why be in the religion if why do that. I've had so much doubts, man, so much doubts in my head. It was really overwhelming, I would say.
Very interesting. The other question I guess I had was, in terms of being you, in terms of expressing who you are now, understanding that you are now who you are, how was your journey in terms of expressing this thing? I mean, how did you gradually start to come into your own skin and sort of become, I would like to say, because you reminded me of this, I would like to say, you know, how did you actually start to bloom your peacock feathers?
Oh, that's a lovely analogy, I would say. And thank you. I would start to say I started to realize that everyone is not going to accept you for who you are. And, you know, I started watching reality programs like my friend Taylor introduced me to RuPaul's Drag Race.
Nice.
And that franchise, I could see a lot of emotions and I could see a lot of families and a lot of hurt for just being gay and like what it meant. And I think watching the show also just experiencing life and like treating people with respect and like kindness and like realizing that if it's between two consenting adults, then what's the problem? And, you know, I rather than started looking at disgust, you know, I started embracing it more, so to speak. You know, I started to develop a can-do attitude, so to speak, because I realized that deep down, you know, life is short. And, you know, I want to make the most out of it, man. Like, you know, I'm not saying I'm the perfect, you know, and I'm really happy about it now. Like, it really makes me happy to say that I think I found my peace. I think I finally found my peace with religion where I needed it to be. I know I'm a Muslim. I know I'm not the perfect Muslim, but I also do realize that none of us are. And that's okay, because we're human. We're going to make mistakes. But the end of what I love about Islam is the fact, going back into Islam again, accepting for what it is. I accept the Quran for what it is. I do believe it's the word of God. And if I believe it is the word of God, then therefore, in my opinion, I will take that as verbatim, like word for word, and I'll accept that being gay is a sin, as long as I repent. And that's between, like, now I've learned that your relationship with God is between you and yourself. Your personal journey with religion is between you and yourself. And honestly, I used to think personal journey was like almost like showing other people that of how religious you are. Like, you know how back in secondary school people would fast and say like, oh, how many days of fasting would you do? Or how many, do you know what I mean? Like, people would say that. And a lot of it was just to show people. I'm not showing anymore. I'm living in my truth. I'm living in my truth, knowing that, you know what? I'm happy for the way the Quran is, because I'm happy with the way that my life is, because I've learned to accept things, because I've chosen to accept it. Like, you know what? Okay, fine. You know what? If you lot are saying it's a sin, hell yeah, fine. It's a sin. Cool. Okay. But I'll still ask for God for forgiveness, because until I'm breathing, until I'm like, like, God's mercy is mentioned more time than God's anger in the Quran, I'd like to believe. I think it's true anyway. I'm not too entirely certain. But there's more times about forgiveness than there is about punishing. So I feel at my heart, I feel at peace knowing that, you know what? I'm aware that Allah created us. I believe Allah knows exactly what He created on this earth. It's a choice whether you want to get closer to Him or not. And then after years of like rebellion and like turning away from Him and like blaming Him things for things and like, and like, and using Him as like a scapegoat to basically cope, when I knew that was not the truth, and I knew that deep down I have to like accept it for what it is, realize that I am a Muslim. No one can tell me anything, and you and your relationship between you and God is between you and God. No one has to intervene in that, because as every religious leader that I keep hearing, that I keep seeing everywhere, I'm not a religious person by any means, but from what I've been seeing and what I've been hearing, It is you, yourself, and I at the end of Judgment Day. And I'm a firm believer of knowing that I want to know that my sin isn't hurting anyone. And a lot of it, people used to say that gay people are like rapists. Did you know that? Like back in the 80s and the 90s.
I can imagine why they would say that.
Right.
It wasn't accepted.
It wasn't accepted at that point. And at that period, a lot of them were that had to be put in mental asylums because they thought it was a disease at that time. And unfortunately, that's a hard, cold truth of our unhidden history. But that was how we were treating it. And I'll be honest, I used to think being gay was like almost criminal, and not just in the eyes of Islam, but in the eyes of society as well, because I had deep connections. I felt bad. I felt really bad within myself. Because that means I will never be able to. I don't want to say the word never, but I highlight most likely scenario. I won't be able to reproduce offspring, if I'm with the opposite gender. Is more likely I won't be able to pass on my genetic.
And that was one of the reasons it was considered not viable, because it doesn't promote the survival of humanity.
That's what I'm saying, and for me, I thought, whoa, being gay was almost criminal, like at that one point. And you know, then my friend Taylor, who's very, very wise, honestly, thank Allah, I'm appreciative of Allah of bringing someone like him. You know, he's not Muslim, but someone who's opened my eyes to say that, look, man, You don't need to feel a certain way about anything. You don't need to be feeling ashamed. You're working on you. That's all you can do. That's all you can show to anyone these days. Having fancy qualification and that doesn't necessarily mean you'll be fit for the job. Unless you are either experienced in handling things, then it's a different equation. I think when my friend Taylor was telling me things like, I started looking at the word maps. You know what maps are? So maps are minor attracted people syndrome. So it was another orientation that wanted to be a part of the LGBTQIA plus community, or tried to. And I then realized my truth, and I realized what Taylor said, which was powerful to me. We're two consenting adults. Children don't have a choice. And that infused with what I do, as you know, with what I do with my work. Obviously, I don't want to disclose what I do, but like, as you know, personally, I've always been a firm believer of always making sure that children are protected and always cared for, because I know it does stem from my own thingy, but I didn't have the best. No one has. If you live, I mean, 9 times out of 10, if you live in East London, man, you probably didn't have the best childhood. Let's face it. With the cost of living crisis nowadays, it's not getting any better. If we have to jump back into reality for a second, and for a long time, I thought being gay was like, that's it. I'm gonna go to hell, and that's it. It's a signed, sealed fate, right? That's how I felt.
Well, I mean, like Stevie Wonder, signed, sealed, and delivered into the flames. Nah, it's fine. I can understand where you're coming from in that respect. Okay, so since coming out as gay, what's been your consistent challenge that you have to endure personally every single day that's still there and you don't think will ever go? What's the one main challenge there?
I think it's the idea of being tolerated, I would be honest. I know that in certain countries, I mean, we just recently had the World Cup in Qatar. And like at the time, and like you can't be homosexual and you cannot drink alcohol there and stuff. I've learned to appreciate other people's customs and realize that, you know, I've accepted it as a lifestyle. And this is my life. It's not a lifestyle, but this is just who I am. You know, Islam is never going to probably come to the idea of being homosexual tolerated in Islam. But you know what? Your intentions deep down, that will make you who you are. It personally, that's my personal belief, I would say. And I think now being gay is just okay. But like, there are certain situations, I will be honest, where I'm like, I don't want to tell people my sexual orientation. Not because they're privy to that kind of access of that information, but just because it's still personal. It has trauma behind it, just like any story. And there's always good and there's always bad.
Okay. So how did, in your mind, how did people's perception of you change when you announced that you were gay? How do you think that perception actually changed?
So at the time, my friends were just like, oh, okay, because when I was in a PlayStation group, the two friends that I mentioned previously, they were straight and they had no idea that I was gay. That was a big shock to them, but they were accepting because we had Taylor in our group. We knew how to survive. We knew I knew how to be, and I also knew that if anyone tried to ridicule me or anything, I knew my friend would have my back, and so that kind of gave me confidence. And also just the idea of having thicker skin, like, don't, like, you know, you don't need to fight people with like there's an important person said this: you can fight with your words, you don't need to actually fight with your fists, and words have more power. And then I started to articulate myself in a way. So after watching American reality shows like Drag Race, and then watching Drag Race UK, I started to familiarize myself with this thick skin attitude and realize that your comments are just comments. In no way is it going to affect me. It may make me ponder about it for a little bit, but in no way is it going to hurt or harm me in any way. Why would I let you do that?
Do you think this thick skin persona that you've donned and that is now ingrained within you, you know, for someone who may be going through something like you, or, you know, if they are wanting to come out as gay, but they need this thick skin, I mean, how would they go about doing it?
Just remember, you know, back when I was in school, like, everyone had rumors about me. It was, like, spreading like wildfire. I had it really rough. Like I was even scared at one point to change in my, like, changing rooms when I was, like, changing for PE, you know, because I thought, what would the boys think? Or, like, would they make any comments or anything? But really and truly, it's also about not letting anyone let you have that say. Because the second you let anyone, it's anyone who talks over you, you're basically you're inviting that disrespect. You understand? That's what I started to realize, that if anyone is coming to you in a disrespectful way, you don't need to engage with them in conversation. You can choose to walk away. You know, the sayings are like, you got to live your life to the fullest. And that's exactly what I want to do. For the people that back at home right now that are worried, thinking, well, Cam, I don't have this thick skin attitude. I don't know where to begin. You know, I'm really, really nervous, man. I don't know what to do. Bro, hold on there. Or sis, hold on there. Or you know, bro, sis, they, them, whoever, however you identify, you're not alone. You never will be. Honestly, this is just a rough phase that you will just have to go through, unfortunately, because that's what's going to make you stronger. Like the song, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I firmly believe in that. You can go through years and years of hate and abuse. It's about how you rise above it. Because when I had those mental health problems and I had all of this, I felt like giving up, man. I was at my lowest. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a social life. And I've just felt like a complete loner and a failure. And, you know, right now I'm 22 years old. It ain't easy. And no one's saying it's going to be easy. It's a journey. But you have to accept that, you know what? It's okay. You just need to find yourself again. Like, even if you're not religious and if you're deferring from religion or anything, I have no problem against people. I just think that if you are religious and, you know, if you think that being gay is like a signed, sealed death certificate, pretty much, or like a sentence to being in hell, that's completely the false narrative. And that people need to start waking up and realizing that in this day and age, lifestyles and society is different from back then. You understand? We're going to have different walks of life and different viewpoints. As human beings, if we all just lived in the same world, how boring would we all be? Like, it would just be uniformity all the time. We might as well just sell our souls to the military if we're going to be that, if we had to follow that paradigm, if we did follow that, you understand? So I just think if you are worried out there, don't worry. Just let everything happen. If someone comes up to you, honestly, and says to you, are you gay? Honestly, this is what I want you to say to them. I don't see how that's any of your business. I really want you to say that because... And I want you to say that in a way that you feel confident about yourself. And it doesn't matter. You will find confidence as you grow older, because that's how I did. It will come with age.
Confidence is a skill you learn.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think, you know what? Just say to yourself, look them in. Don't, if you're nervous and you don't have that level of that energy yet, don't worry. Work on yourself. That's okay. Don't stress yourself out.
You're always working on yourself. You never stop, you know?
And that's why you even hear it with adults. And I'm, you know, as a 22-year-old man, I've heard like 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds saying, you're never too old to learn.
It's true.
You're never too old to learn. So just think, if you are out there and you are worried, why are you worried? You ain't got to be worried. You, like, I understand it's a big secret and I understand people outing you. And I've had people out me to my family. Like, call my parents and say to them that your son's gay.
Do you think being gay is a big part of your identity? And if you think it is, if it is a big part of your identity, does that dictate certain decisions you make within your life?
I don't think it dictates certain things in my life, but I think it's a huge part of my identity. I think that's the most apparent. Like, when anyone approaches me, they can immediately see that I... Unfortunately, as humans, we just have this pre preliminary decision when we focus on somebody when we first meet. First impressions are always important, and what you give off is what you give off. I think it's quite visible to someone that I'm quite flamboyant and extravagant. Sometimes it doesn't have to come across as that I'm gay, but most of my attire and who I am and my mannerisms and such and my and the way I carry myself, you would say I am gay. And I think being gay comes with a huge responsibility. I think being gay has a huge responsibility of educating, because I think genuinely, hand on heart, man, like, I think when people hear the words gay, I think their first reaction is met with like, ew, like, really? Ew, you know? And I want to challenge that. Everyone's always thinking like, oh, you know, like being gay is like a disease, it's not gonna go, and like you're doomed. I want to change that, and I also want to educate people, because not a lot of people, I know someone in my private life whom I'm comfortable sharing as well, that, you know, they're a baby gay, ish. I'm not sure.
What do you mean by baby gay?
So like they're just, so they, I think they identify as bisexual, but I'm not too entirely sure. So they're for the first time trying to talk to a bloke, and he has this notion that if he has adult relations with another man, so to speak, he will catch AIDS. And I had to then like talk to him and say, there is medication, you know, there are things called PrEP that people can take. So if you take PrEP, it will prevent you of like an hour before you have sexual intercourse. It will prevent you from catching HIV/AIDS. If you take it regularly and it's a pill, it is a bit like a pill for life, but don't see it as that. If you are someone who is seeing multiple partners, maybe PrEP will be helpful for someone in your position. I know a lot of gay friends of mine that are on PrEP, those who are sexually active. I'm not. and that there's so much more to it as well. Like, you know, people used to like sodomize it. Like, you know, there's stories about being gay that is considered like wrong, like through religious standpoints. But like, we're moving into 2023, and you know, it has to be, it is nervous, but, and it's also exhilarating at the same time. But you, it just doesn't stop. It never stops. You always have to keep pushing forward.
So you still practice Islam even right now?
Yes. I mean, I don't pray, but I have really strong beliefs at the moment. Like when I listen to like nasheeds here and there sometimes, you know, I remind myself of Islam almost every day. You know, I'm not the perfect Muslim. And I'm not claiming to be. I don't want to be. I just want to be a person that tries and is committed to what he's doing and is doing the best that he can or they can, you know? And just remember, like, it might feel like a race, but really and truly, it's not a race. It starts off with you. You're not in competition with anybody but yourself. And I think once you've genuinely had a sit down with yourself and say to yourself, right, I know I'm not in competition with anybody, let me do this for myself, you'll start to realize how gratifying things are when you start taking care of yourself and start saying to yourself that you will do this. Self-acceptance and improvements have really helped a lot of people, and it does help people.
Okay, so what I always ask in my podcast is, what's the one message or lesson you would want to tell our audience, and why?
Hold on, wherever you are, because you don't get many second opportunities. You don't get third opportunities. And if you do, please take it. Because there are people that I know that I hear stories about that have lost their lives to such things like this. And it hurts my heart thinking that people who aren't accepted should just automatically are better off dead. And that's not okay. I would say, hold on. And I would say, look, I know you're thinking right now it's tough, but just think of it. I'm very blessed and grateful that I live in the UK, because if I was living in like a country that had that forbidden, I would feel a bit scared. I would feel a bit nervous. But remember, just hold on. Don't worry about what other people have got to say. Look after you. Look after you. Seriously, those words, I have to say, look after you and hold on. Don't worry about what they are doing. They're not paying your bills. You pay them no mind. you are out there grafting, working hard for you. You've got to make the most out of your life. Don't settle for less. Don't settle for anyone less. They're either with you or they're not on the same page, and you got to keep it moving. Because when I was in the mental hospital, it wasn't just about getting better. Time doesn't stop for you. Time continues. People are moving on with their life. And unfortunately, you've got to bite the bullet. And just, that is what adult life teaches you, I would say, from my understanding of 22 years of age.
Thank you for your story.
First of all, I would like to say I am by no means a psychologist or a religious expert. But whatever I'm about to say has facts behind it. Being gay in most cases is not a choice. There are a lot of biological factors that affect a person's sexual orientation that science has shown and are actually continuing to unravel in their research. We as humans have always fundamentally wanted to survive. To survive, we need to be able to give off offspring to continue our legacy, and it has been this way for generations. This was actually a basis as to why religions were even formed, for survival. As Stephen Bartlett from Diary of a CEO says, we as humans operate as tribes. We are tribal and we work as social beings. Survival becomes a way of life, and that matures into a cultural phenomenon, which is religion. This tribe mentality still plays true in today's day and age. That being said, we are born as unique individuals with unique talents that are here to better the world. How can you change what you inherently are born as? Yes, environmental factors can be a big player in this, but not big enough to change who or what you are. Just certain minor attributes. You should never be ashamed of who you are. Yes, respect other people's opinions and traditions, but never let that dim your own light. Own who you are, and you will do great things in life. If Cam's story tells us anything, it's that we must accept each other for who we are. For those who are going through something similar to this story, stay true to you and your uniqueness, and you will find your tribe. As Cam said, hold on. Hold on to what you believe in. Hold on to those things that make you feel happy. Hold on to what makes you, you. This episode was a season finale of Whispers in the Wind, Season 1. Thank you to everyone who joined me on this journey. Thank you to all the guests who were willing to share their stories and the lessons they have learned. And for anyone who has a story that they've always wanted to talk about or say, please reach me on the Whispers in the Wind Facebook page, which is linked down in the description below. If you like this episode, then please give this show a rating you think it deserves. Comment something you have learned from it, and don't forget to share it with someone you think it could benefit. As always, I'm Zafran Ahmed, and this is Whispers in the Wind, giving your story a voice. Thanks for listening.